97 FM, 710 Keel, Mike and McCarty. On the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline, Shreveport Attorney William Bradford joining us. William, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Mike. Good morning, Aaron.
Thanks for taking the time to join us this morning. There was a meeting last night at Bill Cockrell Park that you organized. First of all, explain, William Bradford, how you're involved in this and what your position is.
Yeah, so I am the community liaison for the development group that is proposing this project, hired by them through my law firm, Blanchard Walker O'Quinn and Roberts.
And tell us, give us a summary. Everybody was excited. Everybody was positive. We were looking forward to moving. What was the general consensus from the meeting last night?
Well, first off, I want to say thank you to everyone who attended the meeting last night. We had a very good crowd, neighborhood, concerned neighbors, interested parties, general public, and it was a very diverse group of opinions. And we had an open and honest conversation about, you know, the proposed project. We heard their concerns. We took questions. We all provided information from the development standpoint, from the engineering standpoint, from the water and sewer standpoint, from SWEPCO. We had members from the SWEPCO team there, as well as Bill Sabo from Economic Development to talk about some of the jobs impacts. And we provided as much information as we possibly could. We were as transparent as we possibly could be. And again, we heard the concerns of the communities, the surrounding neighbors, the neighborhoods, and we tried to address those concerns as well.
Well, I know, and I was being unnecessarily sarcastic. Sorry about that. But
no problem.
But do you think any minds were changed? Do you think any concerns were alleviated with the answers from last night?
Well, I think there were people there who support the project. I think there were people there who wanted more information about the project, and hopefully those people left with the information they needed to make an informed decision. And then, of course, there are going to be people there who opposed it. But I can tell you this, the people who were there in support and the people who were there to gather information to make an informed decision far outweighed anyone in opposition. Everyone was respectful. And we definitely, you know, I'm from West Shreveport. I grew up in that area. I knew a lot of people in the room. And so it was just a really honest dialogue. And I, again, appreciate everyone taking time in their busy afternoons and their busy lives to hear information about a project that could benefit, you know, well beyond our generation for this area of the country.
Let me ask you a question, William Bradford. You have your big boy britches on because I've gotten this and they want me to ask you.
Sure.
And you know I will.
Of course.
Is there any connection? Former Mayor Tom Arsenault was with Blanchard mm-hmm. Walker, your law firm.
That's correct.
Any connection that got you the job with this developer connecting to the mayor?
No, the mayor and I, no. The answer is no. And I want to be very clear about this. The mayor and I are friends. The mayor and I were partners in law together. The mayor made a decision to run for mayor. He stepped away from the law firm and moved on with his life to the next stage of his life. I remained a lawyer, and I also became the vice president of external affairs for SWEPCO and ultimately have returned to the practice of law. But let me explain this to the public.
Okay.
That was done on my merit. I have friends, I have relationships, and that is part of who I am in this community. I know a lot of people in a lot of rooms, and I've had opportunities that have been invested in me by others, but I also can tell you that I stand on my own two feet. No one got me this job. Okay. No one pitched this on my behalf. It was something that I developed a relationship with the developer at my time during SWEPCO, and ultimately, when the opportunity arose and presented itself, I was able to capitalize and take it. So it was. So to answer your question, no, this has nothing to do with my relationship with the mayor.
Are there safeguards in place, William Bradford, if some of these reports
promises.
Are wrong, if some of the promises are wrong, are there safeguards in place if we can't provide the water, if electric rates do go up, if they don't hire as many people as they say they will? Are there safeguards to protect the people who are opposed?
Yes. So the answer to your first question, the safeguards are both written in contract and they are written in law. You know, some of the same concerns that we have as citizens here were expressed last night. Okay, how does this impact my electric utility rates? Well, there are service agreements provided between the utility SWEPCO and the development that, one, provide there will be necessary upgrades to support this project. And two, more importantly, those upgrades will be paid for by the project and not passed along to the customers that currently exist on SWEPCO's electrical system. That is ultimately approved and vetted by the Louisiana Public Services Commission. Let's talk about water. We all know we need water upgrades. We all know we need revenue to support those water upgrades. And again, there is a water services agreement that provides for the ability of the city of Shreveport to support and provide water to this project. Ultimately, the project will have a maximum allowable capacity of 7.5 million gallons. But again, I used this example last night. You have to support water suppression, fire suppression. You have to support emergency services at your site and location on any commercial property. So that is a high water mark, no pun intended, for the capacity of that facility. That is not the everyday usage. That usage is expected to be closer to the 2 million, 3 million gallon mark. Mm-hmm. Now, for the safeguards in place for the customers and for the public, there are laws in place that regulate environmental regulations. These companies are leading industry leaders in environmental protection. They are concerned with environmental justice. They are concerned with fair practices in the environmental space. And so they have been historically leading edge on environmental protections. And so they intend to and will comply with all local, state, and federal environmental regulations, especially those surrounding health concerns.
Talking with Attorney William Bradford. William, you're a small business owner in Shreveport. One of the proposals is, and discussions have been, tax abatement for these huge companies that are coming in. What type of taxes are they going to be paying?
So, you know, the legislature in 2024 passed a law that said that any data center equipment, purchases, construction materials are exempted for local and state sales use tax. Part of the incentive package that was organized by the team here included a 1%. So instead of paying zero in sales taxes during the construction period, they'll pay 1%. And on a multi-billion-dollar investment, that is a sizable number. And I want to be very clear, they're also paying a portion of the ad valorem taxes. Yes, I am a small business owner. And look, in a perfect world, we would all get some form of incentive. But we understand that when you're making the kind of capital investment on a competitive basis and the jobs investment on a competitive basis, like these companies are, as a state, we have to do things to be attractive. When I open my small business, I'm in Shreveport. I'm going to be here. I'm going to be here regardless. One of the things that we do as a state to compete against other states in order to attract large-scale capital investment like this is offer these types of incentives. And so regardless of the noise that's out there, there will be taxes, ad valorem taxes paid based on the capital investment of this company.
Ad valorem being property taxes, for those who don't realize.
Property taxes.
Okay.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm.
This is a significant number. And I like to use this. Right now, this project is not here. When it is here, whether it pays 40%, 60% of its property taxes, it's paying that percentage more than we have right now in this community.
Right.
And on that scale, that is a sizable amount of new tax revenue to support new roads, new water infrastructure, to support additional job growth and economic development. And so, you know, I wanted to go back to something you asked earlier. There are commitments in that incentive package for 850 jobs minimum. And I use the SLB announcement that happened last week as a good example. SLB had a very similar incentive package. SLB exceeded what we expected to see based on that incentive and announced basically a doubling of size in order to support data center construction last week. Mm-hmm. So that's what these incentives do. We want to see them continue to outperform the baseline. What we set are the baselines. And these companies have a vested interest in performing and being successful, because if they don't, we write in clawbacks into these agreements. Those are millions of dollars of penalties that are treated as taxes. These aren't treated as contractual penalties. These are treated as taxes that the tax assessor can levy and that the sheriff's office can collect on.
Can you stay with us for another segment real quick?
Sure.
All right.
Talking with Attorney William Bradford about the proposed data center. And we'll be right back after the break. Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710keel.com.
More breaking news and trending talk with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Local attorney William Bradford on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline. Follow up on last night's Bill Cockrell Park meeting on the proposed data center. William, a lot has been made about the NDAs that have been signed. concerning this project. When will we know who this is, and when will the public get the information? Been a lot of questions about the NDAs that everybody has been required to sign, and people are like, hey, we want to know who this is. We want more information.
When will we know that?
When will the public get this information?
I think once we know that we have a deal in place, that information will be relayed to the public. Let me explain, and that topic came up last night. You know, there's this illusion that I think that is just false, that this NDA process is nefarious. This is industry standard. This happens whenever you have a large-scale economic development opportunity across the country, in any city, in any state. NDAs are signed for a few reasons. First off, there are studies that need to be done on the front end of determining whether a site is appropriate for that type of development. So those non-disclosure agreements are put in place so that the people who are conducting the studies, the people who need to be providing information to the developer, don't go out and talk about it. Because what happens to property values when someone knows that a large-scale project is potentially locating near or around their property? Prices all of a sudden start going up, right? So there are reasons why you put NDAs in place. There's not some nefarious purpose in this situation. This is to protect the integrity of the economic development process and to ensure that we don't impact the commercial viability of this project or future projects for the developer, because this is a competitive landscape. If you look at the internet, you'll see that there are tons of these data centers being proposed and being discussed, and some communities are accepting them openly, and some communities may have some challenges there. But ultimately, this is a commercially sensitive process. And so the developer is very cautious about revealing their future planning to their competitors. And so we protect the integrity of that process, but we also have the transparency of going through the public comments phase, going to the city council meetings. And that's what I explained to the group last night, is that this is, you know, do I wish the process personally were improved to a place where we could get a little more open about it earlier on? Sure. But the reality is we operate within the rules we have set forth now.
What? Let me ask you, what other, you own property in West Shreveport.
Yeah.
What other kinds of development, kind of a good note here, what other kinds of development do you expect to see in West Shreveport as a result of this if it's passed?
Look, you know, with the amount of new traffic, and when I say traffic in a good way, the amount of new people who will have an interest in West Shreveport, I think you'll see additional and improved hotels. I think you'll see restaurants. I think you will see housing. You know, I think you will see the types of developments that center around this scale of economic development. So a lot of the things that the people in West Shreveport, my family included, would like to see only come as a result of additional investment in that area. So because you're going to see improved infrastructure, water and sewer infrastructure in West Shreveport, because you'll see improved traffic counts, you'll see more economic development, more small businesses locating out there, because there are people now out there to support that type of industry.
What do you say, and I'll ask it to you this way, you and your wife are successful, two young children. Would William Bradford and your lovely wife, would y'all want to live within 500 feet of a data center?
Based on what I have seen, I would not be concerned. I've been to the data centers. I see the surrounding areas. I see the development and growth that's happening around them. So personally, yes. And I will make it, I'll bring it home for you, Aaron. My parents live right down the street, right? They're in that area of concern for these citizens, right? These neighborhoods that are most directly impacted by this. And again, I advocate for this, not because I'm hired to do so. I advocate because I know Shreveport needs an opportunity to grow. And this provides just that. It provides us needed capital investment without, quite frankly, the large-scale infrastructure impact that some other types of growth could yield. And to be very clear, this is an industrial park that exists already.
Thank you. That's where
there
I was.
There is a site plan that is approved already that allows for a large-scale distribution. We're talking trucks backing in. We're talking chemical processes. This is none of that. This is not a high-traffic usage. This is not a heavy load usage. I think people see the size and scale of it and become concerned. But when you talk about the highest and best use of this type of industrial park, this is the cleanest type of property, type of development that could allow, that could go into.
This is like best case scenario for an industrial park.
I believe it is.
Well, it will be heavy traffic for the construction phase. You've got to admit that.
Sure.
I mean, it's going to be busy.
Sure. Yeah, there will be, and correct. And we will work with the community first, and we will work with the officials to ensure that we have a good traffic solution in place, that we have the most minimal impact on the surrounding neighborhoods. I expressed this last night on behalf of the developer and on behalf of myself, that the first concern is the community. Because when you make this, one, because we're all humans and we are all neighbors, but two, when you make this type of capital investment, you want it to be successful. You don't want to be a blight on the surrounding area. You want to be seen as a strong community partner, and that's where we are in this process.
William Bradford, we appreciate your time. Great information, and we will stay in touch.
Thank you so much. It's always great to see you or hear from you all, and happy holidays. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Thank to you and your family. Micah McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710keel.com.
Back to the big stories of the day with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
101.7 FM, 710 Keel. Mike and McCarty. Now, we spoke to Thomas Presley, state senator, earlier this week about these changes. And I can't say proposed changes because the vote went through on LSU Med. They're really, well, I tell you what, let's get Dr. Philip Roseman to explain, what did they do? Why did they do it in the middle of the night? And can we reverse it? First of all, good morning. Thanks for coming in.
Good morning. And, you know, there's a history of this that goes way back with the desire for our community that there be a chancellor here in Shreveport. For the LSU Health Science Center in Shreveport. And there's a lot of reasons for that. And that's why I think Thomas Presley, Sam Jenkins both wrote a letter saying, hey, I didn't know anything about this.
Right.
I think that you should have called me or talked to me about this, and we should discuss it.
Explain what they did, because folks may just be jumping on the train.
Well, they have decided to kind of change the organization chart.
And when you say they, the administration at LSU,
Board of Supervisors. Yes,
Board of Supervisors. And as such, we have at this time, or before now, had a chancellor that was specific for our school here.
And the chancellor for New Orleans.
Chancellor for the Ag Center, for that matter. They're part of this process, too. And instead, now this decision made to move the chancellorship, the final decision-making, to Baton Rouge. And there will be a vice chancellor here, a vice chancellor at New Orleans, a vice chancellor of the Ag Center. So this kind of diffuses out the decision-making over a lot more people, and there's a lot of concern about the priorities that exist in Baton Rouge, about who's going to get attention, who's going to get resources, who's going to get money, how is that all going to be divided up, and we don't have a strong chancellor here to help make those decisions.
We have an interim here right now, correct?
We do. We do. The independence, you'd say, well, does it matter that there's independence or matter that there's autonomy? And I would say this, I think a good example of that, why that's important, is right here. It's actually LSU Shreveport. Because LSU Shreveport, because it was autonomous, because it was independent, it was able to solve some of its own problems by developing virtual programs.
That MBA
hospital
program
administration,
is hot.
MBA.
Yeah. Right.
And during a time when there was not a lot of money to go around and it was bad times at LSU, LSU brought themselves up by the bootstraps, and the teachers there, the faculty there, worked with a company outside and build something that's really spectacular. And it's helped support them for all these years. And some of the growth that goes on at LSU Shreveport is because of the independence and the nature of being able to make decisions.
And known as a very strong academic school.
Yes, absolutely.
I want to make it clear because they sent me an email. This does not impact LSU Shreveport, university.
Right, this is the medical.
Yeah, I'm just taking that as an example why independence is important.
What could this hurt at the LSU Health Science Center? What are your fears that will happen?
My fears is that the things that are important to our community related to LSU Shreveport Health Science Center are enormous. It's a significant driver in our community. My concern is that the priorities that we have here at LSU Health Science Center in Shreveport will take a second seat to the priorities, more a second seat to the priorities of the flagship LSU or even the LSU New Orleans. There's this concern about what I would call priorities. Mm-hmm. And that's especially important when you get down to what Thomas Presley was talking about, probably in the capital outlay and all of these decisions that are made about spending money. I think one of the things that I still remember from the last time we did this is not the first time. One LSU kind of proceeded thing is something that was done talked about 15, 20 years ago, and then previously 30 years ago with Virginia Sheehy when she was in the legislature. So this is a long-standing issue.
Taking it even deeper than that, Dr. Philip Roseman, there are some that are saying, is this the first step? Because it's been discussed before, in historically, that Baton Rouge wants the medical center in Baton Rouge. They want the Shreveport Medical Center. That's been a fear for a while. Is this the first step in that maybe long process?
Well, I don't think so, for a number of reasons. Most of all is that they have a whole huge investment now already in Shreveport and in buildings. And thing, it would be a significant to move to Baton Rouge would cost millions and billions of dollars in just trying to build something there
just
that they already have in Shreveport.
And they'd be within 75 miles of another medical school.
Correct.
Which would be silly.
Yes.
What now, Dr. Roseman? Can this be reversed? Could legislation be passed to reverse this? What does our local community need to do?
Well, Thomas Presley will tell you that there's already legislation that's on the books. I mean, so...
told us that.
That basically says that this can't be done. I expect that if there's a concern about that there'll need to be exploration,
possibly a legal challenge of the board's action.
Yeah, the legal challenge of the board on this, because it's a statute.
Go ahead,
Mike. I was speaking with somebody yesterday that said also that there's a legal requirement that a campus, there's a geographical boundary. If it's a certain number of miles away from another camp, it can't be encapsulated into as another campus. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah,
we
talked about that last time, 15, 20 years ago, and that was the case. I don't know if that's changed. It seems like by what they're talking about, what they expect out of this, that's all changed. But again, I don't know. I haven't got that deep into it.
Can you stay with us? I have a few more questions.
Yes.
Cool.
Dr. Philip Roseman in studio, Mike and McCarty discussing the changes at LSU Med, 101.7 FM, 710keel.com.
Back Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Dr. Philip Roseman in studio, Mike and McCarty, changes at LSU Med. Philip, you mentioned a minute ago about one LSU. So this is not the first time this has been this kind of deal. Explain one LSU and how that didn't happen and how this is different.
Well, this is very, very similar to what one LSU project was about. About 15, 20 years ago. One LSU was a project about flag. LSU is a flagship, and the importance of moving up the rankings and all these different research, and then just general rankings in colleges. There was a great concern about that. But when they did One LSU, it wasn't in the dark of night. One LSU, they produced it, they discussed it, they brought it here to discuss with community leaders here. They got feedback and decided not to do some of the things that we felt were not the best things for our community.
And One LSU would affect LSU Alexandria and LSU Shreveport. The whole org chart.
It affected the whole org chart. But it was, again, similar decisions to what we're seeing today, only it was discussed then. And so we had the opportunity to give our feedback. This was apparently announced one day and then voted on in the next day.
Very shady.
And before you know it, it's done.
My concern are... I have several concerns, and one I'll ask you in your doctor capacity, does this kind of decision impact recruiting? I mean, obviously we've been looking for a chancellor here. Who's coming as a chancellor here now if the job's gone?
Absolutely right. When we talked about this before and as it stands now, it reduces the pool of people who are interested in it that may be the people that you want to be your leader at the school. You know, I remember when the previous chancellor was here, it was very, very important, you know, the title chancellor as far as attracting him to come to this opportunity. And it's the same with the future. Mm-hmm. It does limit when you're looking for a vice chancellor versus you're looking for a chancellor.
Sure.
Just think about it.
Lots of vice chancellors want to move up. They want to be
right.
A chancellor somewhere.
And if you're a chancellor, you can move up into a greater medical school.
Does it also impact recruiting of doctors and instructors? Because if I go Google LSU Board of Supervisors and I see all the mess with the coach and with the governor getting involved and, oh, we're going to report to them? That's who we report to? I'm out. I'll go to Texas.
Yeah. I mean, that's true, too.
Was the governor involved in this?
I'm talking about the coaching.
I know, but I'm asking, was the governor involved? I haven't heard it. Anything.
I don't think so.
Okay.
But he's taken strong control over who's on the LSU Board of Supervisors.
He has. So I don't know what goes on behind the scenes.
Right.
I just know that.
Are you suspect of that?
No, not particularly. I haven't heard anything that would make me think that
I hadn't either.
This is a
major issue
for him.
Which made me curious.
There's other things that he has major issues.
So the doctor recruiting could be an issue too then?
Yeah. I mean, just, you know, anything that weakens LSU Health Science Center Shreveport is going to, reduce its place. You know, it's harder to recruit the students you want. It's harder to recruit the faculty that you want. We need some feeling that there's security and independence and autonomy and that, you know, the school is on a good path. And all of these things all get put together. And so they don't look good out to those that we're trying to recruit.
Well, we touched on it earlier, but last minute, can a legal challenge be mounted? Can this be reversed?
I'm not a lawyer, but I would think that there could be a legal challenge to this because of, again, I haven't read the statute, but I just trust Thomas Presley. And if there is a concern about this, then, you know, I think a challenge with a legal challenges.
And Sam Jenkins as well.
You bet. See, what can the general public do? Do you have some advice for them?
I really don't know what to say. I think that LSU is coming up sometime this week. I don't know who they're speaking to. I think people should be aware of it and really should give the community support for those that are wanting to look at this more closely than what we're doing right
now. You bet.
Dr. Philip Roseman, thank you so much. You know, you got to hit the road.
Well, thank you very much.
You got patients waiting. He's in his scrubs.
He is. Thanks, Doc.
All right. Thank
Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710 Key.
Back to the show with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
We have a huge show today.
I know. I'm very excited. Mm-hmm. I really wanted to go to this meeting last night. My wife, her Sunday school Christmas party was last night,
mm-hmm.
and I was voluntold I was going.
Right.
So
you went.
I did.
As a good husband.
I went to the Sunday school party. And mm-hmm. but there were other guys there that were like, I really wanted to go to that meeting tonight.
Yeah, exactly.
I was like, yeah, me too.
No kidding. Had a good crowd at the Broadmoor Library. Had a good, decent crowd talking about the data center. I think Jim Taliaferro and his fellow councilman, Grayson Butcher, hosted it, and a lot of questions answered.
Was William Bradford at the meeting last night?
I think he was. I'm not sure. I can't guarantee it, but they had some of the stakeholders. It's a big day today. Today's the vote.
Yes.
City Council is expected to vote on the special use permit for the data center, which some have said this may be the final vote before the council. I would bet they have to come back up for design work. Maybe I'm wrong, but this could be the only vote needed before the council, and this could green light the project. So we'll be watching that meeting today.
You've got an area that's already zoned industrial, okay? Mm-hmm. It's already zoned industrial.
Yep.
This is, you've got a huge business coming in. This is like, Aaron, the best case scenario. Business coming into an industrial park.
It's a non-intrusive use.
There's not trucks coming in and out. There's not a lot of traffic.
No chemical stuff.
The noise is going to be no more than air conditioning units.
A rock crushing company could come in there.
How about a chicken processing plant?
Mm-hmm.
How would you like to have a chicken processing plant there?
They could put that in an industrial zone. There's a whole list of things that could be. A crematorium could go in there. I mean, there's a long list of things that could go in.
Crematorium seemed like they'd be pretty quiet, though.
It would be quiet. It might have an odor. I don't know. I've never lived near one. You know, but a wood chip processing plant. Who knows? That had all kind of odor to it. There's so many uses that are allowed by right in an industrial zone. And if you list them all and then you look at the data center, you know, if all the things that they're telling us are true, it's not going to raise our electric rates. It's not going to harm our water system, or it won't deplete our water.
There's not an environmental impact.
That's what they claim. That's right. What they say. So big vote today. Jim Taliaferro is going to join us after 7. He was, of course, at that meeting last night. We'll hear what he heard last night.
That's coming up after the local news, top of the hour, Mike and McCarty. 101. Oh, by the way, we will have Stephen Jackson later this morning. And always fun, Senator John Kennedy.
Oh, I bet he'll be on a roll today.
He's joining us today as well. Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710keel.com. One 7FM, 710 Keel. Mike and McCarty on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline. Shreveport City Councilman Jim Taliaferro joining us. Jim, first of all, good morning.
And good morning to both of you.
I know you, this is early for you. You usually don't get up for another 2 hours, right? Yeah.
I'm not a radio broadcaster. I'm sorry.
No. I'm kidding. Look, last night's meeting, yeah. Broadmoor Library, a lot of people showed up. What was the overall feeling of the crowd last night?
I think the overall feeling, Mike and Aaron, was appreciation. Thank you for putting this on. Thank you for inviting us out. Thank you for, you know, putting forth information that we may have heard, but maybe was confused on, or not heard at all. I heard some information for the first time, or clarification with information for the first time.
Like what?
What'd you hear?
Well, just how, for instance, on the power, our power grid, we had a few questions on grid failure. And Mr. Pratt addressed the grid and its solid, I guess its being solid. And the reason it's so solid is because AEP is so connected with other states that, for instance, if we have to take a generator offline or any kind of a malfunction with any some of the power equipment that is necessary to supply our power, that within this network of AEP, they can actually put another generator, another piece of equipment online from another state, you know, to help us, you know, in the times when maybe we have a maintenance issue or an unexpected failure. I did not know that. I think because the question was asked about Texas, and Texas had a grid failure or a blackout or a brownout, and Mr. Pratt went into this is the reason, you know, that we don't have those kind of things. And he did mention that there was, I forgot the year, but there was an incident where we actually did have one of those. And he said, you know, lesson learned. But so that was very interesting in itself. And of course, I'm always fascinated by the number, I can't go into real detail, but the amount of water that we have and as far as, you know, the cooling and so forth. Now, again, this meeting that the three of us called, Councilman Brooks, Butcher, myself.
Oh, you're breaking up, Jim. Your phone's acting goofy. Wherever you were, go back there. There you are.
All right. Okay, we're good?
Yes, we're good.
Yeah, now we can hear you.
Okay. All righty. So the meeting, we just wanted to make sure that we made every effort to get information, whether you're for it or against it, but we believe that the information is necessary so we can make an informed decision on supporting or not supporting.
Did you change any minds, do you think?
I don't, you know, it's hard to gauge, but I had a lot of people come up to me. There was a lot of after meeting conversations with a variety of our guests who were very good at presenting their side of the equation, you know, with our water department and, of course, AEP I think the designer himself. I tell you another thing that I was very impressed with is the amount of green space that is left out on the pad, so to speak. I just wasn't aware of how much green space we were actually using because that industrial site, when it was developed, I think over 10 years ago, was built for a much larger footprint other than if we put a data center there. So there's a lot of green space, a lot of buffering and so forth for any kind of ambient noise and so forth. I was very impressed with that.
Are you convinced that this is a good idea for Shreveport? Oh, your phone's goofing up. Your phone's goofing again.
All right, hold on.
There you are.
There we go.
Okay, hold on. Yeah, I'm leaving a client out in South Bossier.
Okay.
So I'm going to pull over. Hold on.
Okay.
I want to make sure we get this. All right, so...
Are you convinced?
Are you convinced this is a good idea for Shreveport?
I believe it is. I believe it is a good idea. I know it's new technology, and with anything new comes apprehension. I myself have been on the phone with a lot of people in the East Coast or on the East Side that have these data centers on Zoom calls and so forth on my own. So I wanted to make sure that I was convinced or I was educated, you know, on some of the things, some of the pitfalls and or, you know, the pluses and the minuses, so to speak. So I think this is a good economic driver for Shreveport. I think that we've done our due diligence in this area. So, you know, the meeting was very, very well received. I think the people walked away with a lot more knowledge. Now, I'll be the first to tell you that attendance is not acceptance. So just because people attend doesn't mean that they're going to be buying into it. But the three of us wanted to make sure that, you know, we got as much information out there as possible, shared some information that possibly we had that others didn't. I've been relentless on putting that on my Facebook council page. So I think it was a great meeting.
A lot of the initial concerns, electricity rates, water usage and water rates,
sure,
seem to have really been addressed. Is there anything now that you might be concerned with that you are going to keep an eye on?
Well, this is our challenge. This is our charge, is that this is our responsibility to keep an eye on. So let's just say this does come to Shreveport, and we don't know if it is or not. This is just a projection, but we're trying to be ahead of the curve. And thanks to the NLEP, you know, I think we are. But as far as the projection, I think that it is a good opportunity for us. I'm not sure I answered that question. I kind of got delayed there.
But I'll follow up on Mike's question. Any red flags that you're going to still need to watch?
Yeah. Yes. Of course. It is incumbent upon us to ensure that where this data center is, that they fulfill all of their promises. When they say we're 100% going to fund all the infrastructural repairs, they are going to 100% fund those. We're not going to accept anything else. And SWEPCO works the same way. You know, anytime a big project comes in, it's not SWEPCO that foots the bill. You know, it's that project. So there's a lot of things that they have promised and we have agreed to in contract, I think, that they're going to have to basically keep their word. And, you know, it's Southerners, we're all about a handshake and keeping our word.
And, like, making sure there's at least 150 jobs as promised.
William Bradford, he was very emphatic about that, you know, 150 jobs. That we understand the jobs are, you know, they may be tech jobs. I don't know what kind of jobs they are. I just know that we are going to infuse about 1,500 construction jobs, and that's good because that's going to require housing. I think everybody's going to benefit from the, I guess, residual effect of employment. So I think that's a good thing. Yes, 150 jobs was on the table.
Well, average salary of those 150 jobs is about $85,000.
That's what we've been told. And so there's a promise and a handshake, and we're going to make them stick to their promises.
One more thing, Councilman Jim Taliaferro. This is not your first rodeo. You've been involved actively in our community for decades. Let's roll back the time clock here. In the grand scheme of things in Shreveport, how big is this data center project compared to General Motors, Amazon? You know, I could go on and on. How high up on that list do you put this?
Well, for me, I don't recall anything as large, as big, as massive as this undertaking. I think this may be the biggest thing that Shreveport has ever done in the scale of where we are. I would probably equate it to finding oil in Shreveport, maybe. I don't know. But it is a big deal. I think it deserves every bit of attention that we can give it and due diligence that we can give it. And I think we've done that as a council.
Wonderful. Great stuff.
Shreveport City Councilman Jim Taliaferro, thanks for joining us, and we look forward to the vote today.
Thank you for having me on. Make it a great day.
You too, sir. Stephen Jackson, state rep, going to be joining us in about 20 minutes or so, talking about the NDA legislation that he authored. 101.7 FM, 710 Keel, Micah McCarty.
Breaking news and trending talk with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
And I want to change gears for just a few minutes.
Okie dokie.
Did you watch President Trump last night?
Nope. I zoned out yesterday.
It was very short.
Was it? Okay.
I mean, for you know how he
drones
he,
on and
he
on,
goes
yes.
off script and mm-hmm. And a 7 minute speech can turn into a 34 minute.
Right.
Not last night.
Stuck to it. Okay.
He stuck to it. He highlighted accomplishments.
Good.
And I saw some posts like, well, you know, why is he bragging about it? And if you think about, if he doesn't tout his successes, nobody else is going to. ABC certainly isn't going to.
You got a valid point there, that's for sure.
Nobody else is going to. CNN isn't going to highlight the success on the border, the fact that gas prices are back down around $2 again, about to go under, egg prices, grocery. Even my wife came home and said, okay, grocery prices actually are coming down now.
Oh, good. Okay.
And so that's why. And this morning, let me read a headline, okay?
Mm-hmm.
After Trump's address last night, I'm quoting, Trump gives partisan primetime address, insisting the economy is stronger than many voters feel.
Okay.
AP headlines. Look how slanted that is. Look how divisive just the headline.
Right.
I didn't even go into the story because the headline pissed me off so badly.
Yeah.
Trump gives partisan primetime. Tell me a president that's ever spoken publicly that isn't partisan.
Every president does that.
Shut up.
Did they write that about Biden's speech? A partisan?
Obama?
Yeah.
Were his speeches partisan?
I don't know.
Oh, it just, even now.
It's frustrating.
So, yeah. Insisting.
Did all the networks carry it last night?
No, I saw it. It was on Fox. No, okay. I don't think any network carried it.
Oh, again, they did not.
I don't think. I don't know.
We'll have to
double check.
We'll have to double check.
Maybe somebody can let us know.
If they did. They should have. I mean, they would have carried it if it was a Democratic president.
Of course. Yeah, well, woulda, shoulda, coulda.
I'm sure they say did. That. I'm sure they did.
Oh, I would bet money they did not.
Hmm. Okay.
I would bet money they did not.
And how long did you say it was?
It was very short.
Okay.
Maybe 5 or 6 minutes.
You know, now that you say that, I was watching a CBS show. And
it was right around 8 o'clock.
My show never got interrupted.
There you go.
So it wasn't on CBS Live.
No, it wasn't. They're not going to.
Okay. Yeah, it was the Survivor finale. If President Trump had interrupted that, I'd never vote for him ever. I mean, he would be dirt to me. Yeah, you don't interrupt the Survivor finale for the president. Sorry.
Yeah.
Isn't that terrible?
I've never seen 8 seconds of any Survivor ever.
What is wrong with you?
Not seen the first.
They're going on the next year's the 50th season.
Now, see, that's 50th. Are you serious?
They do two a year.
50th?
Yep. 50th.
So they've been doing this since 1970s or whatever?
No, they do two a year, so they've been doing it 25 years. Right. This is the granddaddy of them all. It was really well done.
Well, I've never seen any of them.
You need to watch them.
But anyway.
Go back and start over from scratch.
I do see.
I actually went out to breakfast this morning before work, and I was surprised that it was cheaper than it had been most recently.
Well, there you go.
It was, my breakfast was under $10 at a local, you know, Waffle. I went to Waffle House. And I thought, well, what else is open that time of day?
I know,
okay.
I know.
So that, you know where I went. But
you could have gone to Whataburger.
No. I wanted bacon. I wanted regular bacon.
Eggs.
Crispy bacon.
Need protein.
I needed grits.
Yeah.
Drive through Whataburger and ask for grits and see what they say.
Yeah.
They don't have them.
And it still blows my mind that Cracker Barrel doesn't even open until like 7.
I know. I don't understand that.
Are you kidding me?
I don't get that at all.
Travelers are on the road.
I really don't get it. Yeah.
Anyway, I digress. Wow. But anyway, I was so frustrated this morning. But I thought last night, I thought, okay, good job. Now, mm-hmm. He's still, of course. Even my wife last night said Trump was really out of line with his comments about Rob Reiner.
It's horrible.
And I said, yes, it was indefensible, inappropriate.
And I don't understand why he does
wrong
that.
Wrong time. So I'm not going to try to defend that. He's not defensible.
He's a shoot from the hip guy, and somebody needs to lock his hips down.
Haven't they kind of taken his Twitter?
Not when you see stuff like that.
Well, was that that wasn't Twitter? That was just that was
I don't
somebody
know
asking him a question.
I don't know where he put that. I'm not sure, but it's yeah. Ugh.
Who was it that said a wise man once said nothing?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Stephen Jackson, state rep, joining us in about 10 minutes. 101.7 FM, 710keel.com.
Back with McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
State Rep Stephen Jackson defends his NDA legislation right after the break. Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710 Keel, and on the free Keel app.
let's get back to the show with Mike and McCarty on 1017 FM and 710 Keel.
House Bill 461 would allow parishes or municipalities to prevent the disclosure of documents, including expense reports, related to economic development negotiations. In a nutshell, here to explain that, the bill author, Representative Stephen Jackson on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline. Good morning, sir.
Hey, good morning and happy holidays.
Merry Christmas to you, sir.
You take issue with some things that your fellow state rep, Danny McCormick, said about this bill. Wanted to give you a minute to kind of explain, where did he go off track on this? What did you have a problem with?
Yeah, I mean, with all due respect and certainly appreciate the concern that Representative McCormick has, but I do believe that he is either, you know, at best, he's either misunderstanding what HB 461, now Act 618, which was signed into law by the governor, Jeff Landry, what it actually does. I think what he's doing is conflating the two issues. You have NDAs, which are contractual documents that individuals sign that prevent them from talking about projects, prevent them from disclosing information. And then you have my bill that was passed, signed into law, that creates a narrow, defined time period for which certain parts of an economic development project are exempt from a public records request. Once that economic development negotiation, once those things are completed, then all that information is subject to public records. So I don't know where Representative McCormick is getting his information from, but all of this information is in the bill. And so I think he's confusing or conflating NDAs with my bill. My bill does not deal with non-disclosure agreements. Nothing about my bill deals. In fact, my bill actually provides for a public notification prior to having the conversations on the stuff.
I don't know if you heard our conversation with William Bradford, but he gave a good explanation of why NDAs are needed when you're looking at high investment properties and projects like the data center coming in.
Yeah, look, NDAs have been around for decades.
And for those, an NDA is a non-disclosure agreement.
Non-disclosure, right. These things have been around for decades. And so, there is this sort of desire for people, and I get it. People want to know what is going on. And so, but again, my bill, HB 461, now Act 618, which is a state law, does not deal with NDAs at all.
What does it just make? Does it just make the documentations and the confidentiality more private? Is that what your goal was?
My goal was basically for us to become more competitive. What was happening was our bordering states, because Shreveport, Lake Charles, some of our bordering cities in Louisiana, we were being outbidded. We were, folks were finding out what we were willing to offer an economic development project, and they would come in and just outbid us. And so why would we, expose our hand that way? I use the football term. We want Lane Kiffin's playbook to be out on the World Wide Web for folks to just see what he plans to do. We would not tolerate that. And so we shouldn't tolerate that with regard to economic development. And so, in negotiations and compromise, my bill lays out an actual process. What we did find was there is a situation, I believe in Ascension Parish, where that process was not followed. They cited my statute, the statute that was created by the legislature for denying a public records request. Well, they didn't follow the process. And so, there's some education with parish attorneys and city's attorneys and mayors and things of that nature that may need to happen. But it's not a bad idea to be able to compete, to strengthen our hand with our competitiveness.
What your bill, has it changed anything with regard to recruiting companies? Do you think it has had an impact already or not quite yet?
I have heard from LEB officials. I've heard from the Police Jury Association. They like the bill. They like what it does. In fact, I want to also make a point as well. Forever and a day, LED has had the ability to do the same thing that my bill did. The ports already had the ability to do what my bill was doing. All my bill did was added local governments, which are parishes and cities, to the exemption law that already existed. So all we did was added the cities and the parishes to it. And in this case, you know, I heard him talking about data centers or whatever. In this case, the city of Shreveport is not even doing the project. This is another entity, so they wouldn't even be able to. They wouldn't be able to use it in the first place.
I
think they're conflating NDAs with my bill, and the two are totally separate.
Okay, I do want to make a point because I was looking at the legislative website this morning, and I want to make it clear that I went and looked at the voting record on your bill. Your House Bill 461, and Danny McCormick was absent when the final vote came up on that bill, just FYI. So I'm putting that out there. If he's so opposed to it, maybe he should have voted on it. I know he's going to be mad at me, but that's the truth. I'm putting it out there, so FYI.
Well, let's just put it this way. That bill also passed with an overwhelming majority in the House, and it passed just narrowly, but it passed by veto-proof majority in the House. I think some people need a boogeyman on this issue. I think you noted as well, Aaron, that the House, the legislature is, you know, controlled by Republicans. And so this was a bipartisan agreement. The Police Jury Association and the Louisiana Municipal Association asked for this particular provision for their members to be able to strengthen their hand with regard to negotiations. And so that's all my bill does. If the law needs to be tweaked, let's tweak it. But I don't want people to get on here and say, you know, my bill is the reason why they can't get information. That is not the case. My bill requires a public notice. And before any incentive can be provided, it still has to go for a public vote of the council, the police jury, or commission throughout the state. So there's still a public process that has to take place, even with my bill.
Interesting. Well, we appreciate you. I know you wanted to follow up because you felt like some misinformation was out there, and we wanted to give you that opportunity. We appreciate you joining us.
Absolutely. I thank you for the opportunity to clarify and put that out there, and hope you all have a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
You too.
Thank you, Representative thank Jackson. You. Merry Christmas to you and your family. Coming up in about 20 minutes from right now, Senator John Kennedy, the always entertaining. We're going to be talking about cost of living, amongst other things. Mm-hmm. Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710 Keel, and be sure to download that free Keel app. That's how you get in contact with us. 101.7 FM, 710 Keel.
More breaking news and trending talk with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
When did we get married? It's get off my back.
Got a good one. I got a good one.
No, don't you throw that at me. Don't you throw that at me. If I don't write it down.
I know.
It's gone.
You have senior moments. I get it.
It's gone. I had to make my notes here because the new Shreveport Police Headquarters, the renderings, you got some renderings.
I did. It's
artists,
gorgeous.
Architectural renderings.
Yes.
So it's not just going to be a box.
No, it's actually gorgeous.
Nice.
It really
okay,
is.
Okay, good.
You can see it at keelnews.com. It is really a beautiful complex. We know they opened bids this week, and they came in at 10% under what was anticipated. It looks like from the drawings or renderings that I got. Why am I talking like
I don't
that?
Know.
I don't know.
Architects don't talk like
no,
that
they
that
don't.
I know
architects
of.
Architects talk very professional. I love architects. It looks like the front of the building on the Texas Avenue side
right.
is going to be the part they preserve.
Okay.
The kind that looked like the hospital. And they're going to gut that
part. Preserve it.
Yes. And the backside of it on the Murphy Street side looks like that's the part they're going to tear down and build. I mean, it's a real modern with gorgeous windows. It's going to be kind of a one entry point for the public so that it's not, you know, it's all these entry points. It's going to be built and designed to be a police station where everybody comes and goes through one area.
These people look like video game people.
Well, this may be a little bit of AI stuff here with the design for the people design. I don't know.
This guy's on his phone in the lobby.
Yeah, exactly. But look at the lobby. I mean, the lobby looks gorgeous. Pretty incredible.
Looks like what that big seal on the floor looks like the CIA headquarters
yes,
or something.
It really looks beautiful where there's going to be a section in the lobby for records. There'll be another place where you can go and get ask questions, an information booth it almost looks like. It really does look gorgeous. And the Texas Avenue side is going to have a big Shreveport Police Department logo across the front. It really looks beautiful.
I like the glass. Mm-hmm. A lot of glass in the front.
And it's a little history for this. And I know we're going to take a break. We voted on this in 2021.
Okay.
And there were five propositions on the ballot that time. And the only one that passed was the one for fire and police. All the others went down. But the folks said yes to fire and police, passing about $69 million worth of stuff. And we're now getting to where we're doing the work, which is kind of cool.
Senator John Kennedy going to be joining us coming up right after the news, top of the hour. Of course, we're talking about cost of living, it's coming down.
Mm-hmm.
It changes. And I'll tell you, let me tell you this real quick, last 15 seconds. Everybody's from Stephen Bessent on down are projecting 2026 to be incredible. The economy is going to explode. Aaron, this scares me because something's going to happen.
Ah, okay.
Something is going to happen.
All
you
right.
Mark my words. Last time it was COVID.
Let's hope not.
There have been two assassination attempts. I'm just telling you, the better the news and the better things get, honestly, the more it scares me.
Mm.
Something is going to happen.
Okay.
Senator Kennedy next, 101.7 FM, 710 KEEL. Mike and McCarty. On the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline, Senator John Kennedy joining us. Senator, good morning. Merry Christmas to you and your family, sir.
Good morning. Merry Christmas to you, too.
Last night, President Trump addressed the nation, and he was espousing his successes and talking about the economy, and things are looking better. Do you agree with his assessment from last night?
I wouldn't trade America's economy for the economy of any other developed country in the world. China, no way. They're in a recession. You can say the same thing about France and Germany and the UK and Canada and many of the countries in South America. That doesn't mean things are perfect. Clearly, we have a slowing job market. Unemployment has ticked up. But we just got some inflation numbers this morning. The inflation is ticked down to about 2.7%. So I would say things are better, but they're not well.
My wife came home the other night from grocery shopping, and she said, you know, prices actually are coming down. And when you start, Senator, looking at midterms, that's going to be the crucial issue that voters are going to be thinking about is cost of living.
When moms and dads, well, this is just my opinion, of course, but when moms and dads lie down to sleep at night and can't, at the top of their list of reasons why they can't sleep is cost of living. I mean, that's just a fact. You can argue that it shouldn't be, but it is, and that's the way many Americans feel. The real issue is what do we do about it? The president, no matter who the president is, can't do everything. Congress is an equal branch of government. And in my judgment, at least in the Senate, we're not doing enough about it. We could pass a bill next week in the Senate through what's called reconciliation without a single Democratic vote. We would welcome Democratic support, but we could pass a bill addressing cost of living without any Democrats.
What would it do? What would it do? What would be the goal?
Well, a couple of things. Number one, we have a list of over 200 tax changes to our tax system that would stimulate the economy and increase wages. Number two, we spend, the American businesses spend between $2 and $3 trillion a year on regulation, government regulation. That's added to the cost of goods and services. If we cut regulation by 25%, the cost of goods and services would go down. We have a housing bill that's already, I'm on the banking committee. We passed out a housing bill unanimously, both Democrats and Republicans. It will lower the cost of housing. We should use reconciliation to address the cost of health care, particularly the Obamacare subsidies. Obamacare, whether you subsidize it or not, is just clearly broken. Prices, subsidies or not, continue to go up between 8% and 10% a year. I mean, it's just, despite good intentions, Aaron, it's just broken. I mean, we were told Obamacare would make our insurance cheaper, and it's made it more expensive.
Let me go back to the prices for a minute real quick, because I'm looking at your Bureau of Labor Statistics out of the government, and it shows the index for food actually up 2.6% over the past year. The index for energy up 4.2% over the past 12 months. Is this data wrong?
No. There's some aspects of the economy where prices of goods and services are up. Some where it is down. When you get an inflation number, that's an average of all goods. So you can always point to certain areas of the economy. Gas, for example, the price of gas is down.
Yes.
But the truth is, I think if you try to be fair-minded about this, a couple of years ago, we had 9% inflation. That inflation did not originate in a bat. It was man-made, and that man's name is President Joe Biden. We have battled to get it down, and we now have it down to 2.7%. But what that means is it doesn't mean that prices necessarily are falling in all respects. It means that prices were going up at an annualized rate of 9%. Now they're going up at an annualized rate of 2.7%, but they're still going up.
Don't you think the tariffs have had an impact on keeping prices higher than they really should be? Is that a concern of yours too?
The results are very mixed, and I don't think we know yet.
Okay.
I'm not a big tariff guy, but when the president imposed his tariffs, press, of course, asked me how's it going to turn out, and I said, I honestly don't know. We've never had tariffs this high in 100 years, and I can't predict the future. I have to wait for it like everybody else. And the truth is that I was reading a piece last night, an analysis. The truth is that the tariffs have not contributed to inflation as much as a lot of the experts said, mainly because many of the businesses are not passing on the costs of the tariffs. They're eating them.
There's also a Speaker Johnson told us a week or two ago that next year, when the tax changes go into effect, that a lot of Americans will actually see, and he used the number, $10,000 more in their checks. Is that an inflated number? Are there some of us that are going to actually see that big of a beef up?
I don't know the amount. I do know Mike is right. The speaker's right that most of the provisions of the One Big Beautiful Bill will not take effect until January 1. And I do think that we'll see some dramatic relief. For example, beginning next year, businesses can write off, not depreciate over time, the cost of research and development or the cost of investments in new equipment and facilities. Those savings, not all of them, but many of them are going to result in higher wages. So I think if the one big beautiful bill does its job, and I think it will, you will see wages go up, and that of course helps people deal with prices.
You know, President Trump's Secretary of the Treasury, Scott Bessent, says when you listen to him, of course he's Trump's Secretary of the Treasury. I understand that, sure. But he said 2026 is going to be phenomenal for the economy. When things start, like you just mentioned, when these things start taking effect, if people can hold on, it's going to be amazing.
I think it's going to be much better. I don't see the numbers that the Treasury Secretary sees. I don't have his data, so I'm not going to second guess him, say he's wrong or right in terms of percentages. But I do think that the effect of the One Big Beautiful Bill is going to be very, very positive. Particularly on increased wages.
One more thing, I'm quoting you from the New York Post with regard to more reconciliation bills. Here's the reality, says Senator Kennedy. Most of my Democratic colleagues would rather bathe with their toasters than support any part of President Donald Trump's agenda.
Right.
Are they just not paying attention to what's going on in the world?
No, they it's all political. I hope I'm wrong, but I don't see an appetite among any of my Democratic colleagues in the Senate to try to help us. They want to run in the midterm elections on the issue of affordability, the cost of living. So if we want to do something about it, we're going to have to do it without Democratic help. And the only way to do it without Democratic help is to go through the reconciliation process. That's how we passed the One Big Beautiful Bill. Why we haven't been working on a second bill, I don't know. If I were king for a day, I'd bring a bill tomorrow. Mm-hmm. But under the Senate rules, only the majority leader, one person, can decide to bring a bill to the floor of the U.S. Senate. And I have begged Senator Thune, who's my good friend, to please bring another reconciliation bill. Please. Pretty please.
And what's his response been?
He will not commit. He said all options are open. But John's been saying this since July when we passed the One Big Beautiful Bill. What we should have done was pass the One Big Beautiful Bill and then started on the second reconciliation bill. We should, in putting it together, we should say, Democrats, come join with us. But they're not going to join with us.
No.
And we don't need their votes. We only need 51 votes. We can do it with all Republican votes. And for the life of me, I don't understand why we're not. If you went to Chuck Schumer today and said, Chuck, even though you're in the minority, you have the right to pass any bill you want to within the restrictions of the Budget Control Act, and you don't need a single Democratic or Republican vote. Would you do that? He will jump on that like a hobo on a ham sandwich. Now, why aren't Republicans doing it?
Right.
Why aren't we doing it?
Yeah.
Instead of just talking about cost of living, whether you agree the cost of living is up or not, many Americans believe it.
Yeah.
And in some respects, it's accurate. So why aren't we trying to do something about it? We don't need Democratic votes. Why aren't we sitting on our ice-cold, lazy butts and just debating it?
Well, but even getting all Republicans together is sometimes difficult.
Well, sure, but it's not impossible. Right. We did it with the One Big Beautiful Bill. We did it with the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017. It can be done. Now, will we get every Republican vote? No. Senator Rand Paul is always a challenge, and there's some others. But we don't need every Republican vote. We only need 50 out of the 53, and then J.D. Vance can break the tie.
Well, I hope you get toasters for your Democratic Senate colleagues for Christmas. I hope you send them all a toaster this year. I think that's a good idea. I'll help fund
it. Ham sandwiches.
Yeah. I think the most I'm going to send out to my Democratic colleagues is maybe a text. That's about it. That's going to be their
Senator, thank you so much for your time. Merry Christmas to you and your family, and Merry we look forward to 2026.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
You too, my friends. Thank you.
Senator John Kennedy, Mike and McCarty. Coming up in about 20 minutes, DEA Special Agent in Charge Steve Hofer going to talk about the new designation of fentanyl as a WMD. What does that mean? Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710keel.com.
Big Stories of the Day with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Christmas is 1 week from today.
I cannot believe it.
That's crazy.
I got so much to do. So much to do. Holy crud.
I don't have to ship anything this year. Micah's coming home.
Oh, good.
She's coming home this weekend.
Nice.
Casey's just, he's over in Kilgore. So,
okay.
And he's coming over.
Right.
My mom's here, so.
I've gotten everything shipped that I needed to ship, I think. I've just got a couple of little things to go pick up. And, you know, you just got to go do it. You got to make the time to do it.
That's it. I know.
The week is almost up. It's like, holy cow. We're almost there. It's almost Christmas. Where'd this year go?
Unbelievable.
Blink of an eye,
yeah,
and it's
really
Christmas.
Is. Really has.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Mm. Fentanyl has been now designated a WMD.
Wow.
That's pretty incredible.
That is.
We're going to get what that means by the DEA Special Agent in Charge, Steve Hofer, joining us in about 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM. I know what WMD means, but what that means for the drug. 710 Keel.
Back Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Well, President Trump signed an executive order designating illicit fentanyl as a weapon of mass destruction. This is an important designation. We'll find out why with DEA Special Agent in Charge Steve Hofer right after the break. Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710keel.com.
Back to the show with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
On the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline this morning, Special Agent in Charge, DEA, Steve Hofer, joining us. Did I get your last name right, Steve?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Yes, sir. Thank you so much for joining us. President Trump signing an executive order designating fentanyl as a WMD. Why is this important?
Yeah, this is so important and such a significant step forward in the fight against the deadly drug of all synthetic opioids, specifically fentanyl, because as promised, this administration is moving forward the full weight of the U.S. government, because fentanyl, as we know, has killed hundreds of thousands of Americans over the last few years. And so fentanyl is clearly more of a chemical threat than it is a traditional drug threat.
What communities is it hurting the most? I know you deal with it very closely. What communities is it harming the most?
It is in absolutely every community across America. There's nowhere that fentanyl has not found its way and just caused havoc and been significantly impactful to every community in America, every neighborhood. It is the number one drug threat all across America.
Where's it coming from? Can you pinpoint that?
We know that a large majority of fentanyl comes and is manufactured and is smuggled into the United States, and the people that are primarily responsible for that, is there are two Mexican cartels, the Sinaloa cartel and the Jalisco New Generation, or better known as CJNG cartel. And if I may add to that, where it comes from, and I think the one important, very significant point to this is, unlike drugs of days of old, where there had to be, we waited for a growing season, for example, to produce cocaine or heroin or even marijuana. These synthetic drugs like fentanyl, you can produce as much as you can get the precursor chemicals for, and then it is a matter of just getting there, mixing it together, producing the finished product, and then smuggling it into the United States.
DEA Special Agent in Charge Steve Hofer. This is important because this helps the administration and helps you as a DEA in the DEA in this battle against these cartels. This allows them to militarize this battle.
Absolutely. You know, I think one important point to look at is when we talk about the cartels, we're talking about maybe not just the cartel bosses that are sitting in Mexico. We're talking about any kind of operative or associative, anybody that's working with the cartels. And they may not necessarily even have met anybody that is a high-ranking cartel member. But
like those running drug boats across the...
Could potentially be that way. But people have to recognize that fentanyl comes from somewhere. And I'm telling you, it comes from those cartels that are in Mexico. So this new executive order, people need to recognize if they are distributing fentanyl in any manner or helping in any manner, that the sentencing could be life-changing for them. Because no longer are we looking at drug trafficking charges. We're looking at a national security threat.
Also, it also comes with this executive order comes with greater federal resources, I'm told. Can you explain what that will entail?
Yes. Like any kind of national public threat, this executive order now enhances DEA's capability to tap into national intelligence resources and to partner even closer with Department of War to continue to make impactful investigations and be a part of the solution. We need to get to a point where fentanyl, we have a free America from fentanyl.
Steve Hofer, how will this help the DEA in your battle against fentanyl and other these dangerous opioids?
Well, I think there's a couple of fronts. First is what was just mentioned is the fact that resources are more and more resources are now open to DEA, in that we shift from traditional drug investigations to now national security investigations or operations that we're going to be a part of. But not only that, as we all know, this kind of attention and ultimately the sentencing and prosecution that comes along with anybody that's involved with the distribution of or smuggling of fentanyl can be very impactful.
You've had some success stories already. Describe what's been happening. I believe it's St. Tammany Parish where you've had really great progress in curbing fentanyl deaths. Tell us what's going on there.
Yes. Thank you. In the last couple of years, we've had some real great success in St. Tammany Parish with our approach. We call it the trifecta. It's a three-pronged approach where primarily is our focus on destroying the cartels, ridding the local area of the cartel presence. And then two is making sure that all of our partners, state, local, and other federal partners that we have, that this is where our primary focus is, and using all of our resources together to target specific fentanyl distributors. And then third, which really very important, is the prosecution level at both the state and the federal level, that distributors of fentanyl that result in an overdose death, they're being treated as murderers. And the homicide charges that come along with this, that has been extremely impactful, to the point where we have seen the last 2 years a 70% drop in fatal overdoses in St. Tammany Parish.
I want to ask you, see if we can connect the dots with the Catahoula Crunch that's going on in the Southeast Louisiana area. Are there some of those efforts that are being done? Are we realizing that some of these folks that we're catching in New Orleans area may be related to the fentanyl drug trade? Is that something you're hoping? And I know y'all coordinate through your efforts too, right?
Yes, I mean we're part of that effort, that operation. It is not new that we partner with other federal agencies, specifically with Homeland Security and the Border Patrol partners. But with their enhanced efforts, yes, we're taking advantage of the opportunity of having additional resources in the area, and using our tools and our resources to facilitate additional fentanyl investigations. It is resulting in additional intelligence for us to open new cases, but it also does lead to immediate arrests and contributing to removing fentanyl from the area.
One more thing before we let you go. I know you're busy. For folks who don't know, and I'm maybe in that list too, describe what fentanyl is and what it does to people.
So that's a really good question. And I think that, if I may, I'll talk a little bit about this, that one of the major points that I know DEA and many other federal agencies across the whole United States are concerned with is educating Americans of exactly what it is that we're dealing with. And I think one misconception that we'd like to get through is that there are, in our minds, there are two different kinds of fentanyl. There is the medical grade fentanyl, which can be used for a lot of good by doctors and physicians, and it can be used as a wonderful drug when used correctly. But what we're talking about is illicit fentanyl, and that is someone who's not a doctor, who doesn't know what they're doing, that gets their hands on all of the precursor chemicals, and they go into a garage or a warehouse or just out in the jungle somewhere down in Mexico, and they get their barrels of these chemicals together, mix it up, and no one's regulating it as you would with regular medical grade fentanyl, but no one's regulating it. Those come into the form of either powder or pills, or it's mixed with other illicit drugs and makes its way into the United States. And then that's how it's killing hundreds of thousands of Americans, is because it's not regulated. It's not the same kind of fentanyl that person would get care for in the hospital.
And this legislation specifically mentions illicit fentanyl.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes, that's correct. Correct. Because it is a chemical weapon.
We can't thank you enough for your help. Great, great story. I hope we'll be in touch again soon.
Yes, thank you.
You bet.
Steve, thank you so much. Merry Christmas, and thank you for your work, sir. Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710keel.com.
Now more breaking news and trending talk with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Council votes today on the data center. Mm-hmm. I got a text from Dr. Philip Roseman yesterday. We talked about, of course, LSU Med, but he said, talking about this vote, he says, the message Shreveport needs to make is we welcome investment here. The vote should be yes by the council, and it should be, all caps, unanimous.
Mm.
That will send the message to others considering investing their money in our community and negate the harm of the MPC. Good point.
That MPC vote was a tie vote, which essentially turned down the data center proposal. And the company or the developers are appealing for the special use permit in an already existing industrial zone.
Right.
For this, because of the 24/7 hours. And I can't stress enough, and you and I have talked about it a lot, the industrial zone, there could be a rock crushing operation there. There could be all kind of things there that would be way more intrusive than a data center. So my questions have been answered, and I've had a lot of questions. I think yours are too.
I think so. Absolutely.
I think now, the council's questions are answered.
I agree with what you say. They need to follow up, and hopefully these answers that we've gotten are truthful.
Yes, exactly. And make sure that we don't ignore it. Yep, exactly.
Do not go up. They do provide a minimum of 150 good-paying jobs. Mm-hmm. That the water, it does not put a strain on our system. It does not affect our power grid.
Right.
It doesn't raise water rates.
There are not health issues in the neighborhood or surrounding it. It is one of those things you just got to keep an eye. Trust but verify, an old Ronald Reagan quote.
Right.
You know, we trust that they're saying what they're going to do and they're going to mean it, but let's verify it after the fact. Now, there's going to be a lot of mess, you know, for 5 years of constructing a 2.8 million square foot complex like this with all the computers they're putting in there. And there's going to be headaches along the way.
But
don't get me wrong.
When you talk to those in Richland Parish, they said, man, hotels are booked. The gas stations are booming. You can't buy beef jerky or beer over in Richland Parish because it's sold out.
Absolutely. So we hope that happens here. Again, the meeting is 3 o'clock today. I anticipate a lot of people coming to the meeting. You can get your 3 minutes to speak. It's not going to be a Q&A type session.
Right.
Everybody can speak for 3 minutes, and then they're going to vote on it, expected to vote on it. I think it's the last item on the agenda, so you might have to wait a while because there'll be a lot of people that probably want to speak out that say like they want their last-ditch effort to try to stop this data center. Don't think it's going to work, though.
I hope not, honestly.
We shall see.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710 Keel, and on that free Keel app.